clay tablets with a stylus, a pencil-like object, which was pushed into the clay and left wedge-shaped marks, which were arranged in various patterns to symbolize words. The idea is not unlike contemporary ideographic languages like Chinese. Ideographic meaning you have a single arrangement of signs to designate a word or, in some instances, a syllable. As a matter of fact, we're told in the Bible that Abraham comes from a Sumerian city, the city of Ur, which is, again, very near modern Basra in Iraq. That's where the site of it is. However, as is often the case in notably flat regions, especially notably flat regions that are not defended by natural barriers, which are insurmountable on either side, there was a lot of political turbulence in the Middle East. And at last, after a long run, Sumer fell, to be succeeded by Assyria and Babylon and Persia, all of them in succession. Actually, there were two Babylons, Babylon and Neo-Babylon, or Babylon the Second, as you could think of it. All of them theocratic kingdoms, that is to say, priests held a lot of power, all of them based on irrigation, all of them, except the last, based on chariot warfare. Warfare with charioteers and archers pulled by horses. The Persians used a somewhat different system. That's the cultural matrix that the Hebrews came from. And there are myths and stories coming from that matrix in the Epic of Gilgamesh, which was originally Sumerian, written about 2200 BCE. There are themes and myths from ancient Near Eastern civilization which appear in the Hebrew Bible, recast, reformulated, rethought, but nonetheless. That is the cultural hearthland from which the Hebrews come. But there was another axis of civilization with which the Hebrews had to interact, and that is Egypt. There was another cultural center with which the Hebrews had to interact. The Hebrews, in fact, found themselves in a position not unlike that of Poland before World War II, with Germany on the one side and Russia on the other. Israel spent its entire cultural life in antiquity between great powers, whichever power happened to be ruling in the Near East at the time, and always Egypt. Egypt, like Mesopotamia, of course, is hot, fertile, because of the Nile and the annual floods of the Nile, and agriculture began there about 4000 BC. By 3100, under a king named Narmer, the whole Nile Valley was unified in government, and things took off. The Great Pyramid, stimulus to mystics and occultists of all sorts for thousands of years since, was built about 2500 by King Khufu. Very steady, stable civilization. Right before the Exodus, you have some interesting goings-on. Egyptian traditional religion had lasted more or less without a break for more than 1,000 years, well more than 1,000 years, when, in a reign running from 1352 to 1336, a quirky pharaoh with the name of Akhenaten decided that he would abandon traditional Egyptian religion and worship just one god, Aten, the sun god. Skeptics have wondered, it has to be said, whether Hebrew monotheism might have been influenced by the eccentric ideas of this pharaoh. In any case, they were rejected, and during the reign of Ramses II, from about 1280 to about 1210, the Exodus is generally held to have taken place. Egypt continued, of course, long after that, was conquered briefly by Assyria, conquered briefly by Persia, conquered by Alexander the Great, maintaining its cultural integrity for the most part that whole time, until finally the Greeks, who had ruled since the conquest of Alexander, the Ptolemies as they were called, were deposed by the Romans. And we all know the name of the last of those rulers. The mistress of the Nile, Cleopatra.